Hi, this is Mrs. English again. I'm going to be reading to you from Homer's Odyssey, Book 15. When we ended Book 14, Odysseus was going to sleep in the hut of the swineherd, and he was very pleased with his servant, with Eumaeus, with his Xenia, and Odysseus got his extra blanket. That was the end of Book 14. Book 15. At this time, Pallas Athena made her way into wide-spaced Lake Demon to remind the shining sun of great-hearted Odysseus of his journey home and speed his homecoming. She found Telemachus there with the glorious son of Nestor sleeping in the forecourt of worshipful Menelaus. Indeed, the son of Nestor was held fast in the softening sleep, but the sweet sleep was not on Telemachus, wakeful through the immortal night, with anxious thoughts of his father. Gray-eyed Athena stood close by his head and addressed him. Line 10. Telemachus, it no longer becomes you to stray off so far from home, leaving your possessions behind and men in your palace who are so overbearing. You must not let them divide up and eat up all your substance and make your journey a vain one. So urge Menelaus of the great war cry with all speed to give you conveyance, so you will find your stately mother is still there at home, since now her father and her brothers are urgent with her to marry Eurymachus. He is outdoing the rest of suitors. In the giving of gifts, he's been piling up presents to win her. No property must go out of the house unless you consent to it. Line 20. For you know what the mind is like in the breast of a woman. She wants to build up the household of the man who marries her, and of former children, and of her beloved and wedded husband. She has no remembrance when he is dead, nor does she think of him. For yourself, when you come back, you should turn over everything to whichever one of the serving women seems to be the best one, until the gods show you who is to be your honored wife. Also, you should put away in your heart this other thing that I tell you. The best men of the suitors are lying in wait on purpose for you in the passage between rocky Samos and Ithaca, longing to kill you, line 30, before you come back to your own country. But I think they will not achieve it. Sooner the earth will close over some one of those suitors who are eating away your substance. But you must keep your well-made ship away from the islands and sail with the night, and that one of the immortals who watches over you and guards you, this would be herself, Athena, will send a following stern wind. But when you make land at the first promontory on Ithaca, then speed your ship and all your companions along to the city. But you yourself go first of all to the swineherd, that man who is in charge of the pigs and whose thoughts toward you are kindly. Line 40. There spend the night, but speed the man along to the city to take your message to circumspect Penelope, saying that you are alive and safe, and you have come home from Pylos. So she spoke, and then went away back to tall Olympus. And Telemachus wakened Nestor's son out of his sweet sleep, stirring him with a nudge of his heel, and spoke a word to him. Wake, Pisistratus, son of Nestor, and bring your solid-hoofed horses under the yoke to harness, so we can start back. Pisistratus, the son of Nestor, said to him in answer, Telemachus, though we long for the journey, surely we cannot drive through the dark of the night. Line 50. But it will be daylight presently. But wait until the hero, the son of Atreus, spear-famed Menelaus, brings you his gifts to put in the chariot and speaks to us, and with kind words sends us away on our journey. For a guest remembers all his days the man who received him as a host receives a guest and gave him the gifts of friendship. And of course, these are exchanges of Xenia. So he spoke, and soon after dawn of the golden throne came, and, rising up from his bed where he lay by sweet-haired Helen, Menelaus of the great war cry came and stood near them. As soon then as the dear son of Odysseus noted him, he made haste, line 60, to slip the shimmering tunic over his skin, and the hero, yes, this is now our Telemachus, being referred to as a hero, threw a great mantle over his heavy shoulders and went to the door and stood by his host and addressed him, he, Telemachus, the dear son of godlike Odysseus. Great Menelaus, son of Atreus, leader of the people, now send me on my way at last to my own dear country, for now the heart within me longs for the homeward journey. Then in turn, Menelaus of the Great War Cry answered, "Telemachus, I, for my part, never will long detain you here when you strain for home. I would disapprove of another hospitable man who was excessive in friendship, as of one excessive in hate. In all things, balance is better. It is equally bad when one speeds on the guest unwilling to go, and when he holds back one who is hastening. Rather, one should befriend the guest who is there, but speed him when he wishes." Line 75. "Yet stay, until I can bring you fine gifts to put in your chariot, and you can look at them with your eyes, while I tell the women to prepare a dinner out of what we have here in abundance. For there is both honor and brilliance in it, and there also is profit to dine, then go a long way over the endless earth. Therefore, if you wish to make a tour through Hellas and midmost Argus, and have me go myself with you, I will harness my horses and be your guide through the cities of men, and there will be no one who will send us away just as we are, but each one will give us one thing to carry away from us, with us, some tripod or cauldron well wrought in bronze, or a pair of mules, or a golden goblet." Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, "A great Menelaus, son of Atreus, leader of the people, I wish now to go back to our country, for I left behind me no one when I went to look after my own possessions." Line 90. "I must not, going in search of my godlike father, ruin myself or have some stored-up treasure lost from my palace." But as soon as Menelaus of the Great War Cry had heard this, immediately he told his wife and all the maidservants to prepare a dinner out of what was there in abundance. And, risen from his bed, Eteoneus, the son of Boethous, came to them, since he had his own dwelling not far from them. Menelaus of the Great War Cry told him to kindle a fire and roast the meat, nor did the man disobey him. Meanwhile, he himself went into the fragrant chamber, not alone, but Megapenthes and Helen went with him. This Megapenthes in line 100, this is Menelaus's son by one of his serving women. We had a mention of him back in book 4, line 11 and 12. So Megapenthes and Helen went with him. But when they came to the place where they had their treasures stored, the son of Atreus took up the goblet, handled on both sides, and told Megapenthes to carry the mixing bowl that was made of silver. But Helen went to stand by the storing boxes, where there were elaborately wrought robes. She herself had made them, and Helen, shining among women, beautiful, lifted out one of them, that which was the loveliest in design and the largest, and shone like a star. It lay beneath the others. She went on her way further and out through the house until she came to Telemachus, line 110. Then fair-haired Menelaus said to him, "Telemachus, may Zeus, loud thundering husband of Hera, accomplish your homeward journey in the way that your heart desires it. Of all those gifts that lie stored away in my house, I will give you the one which is most splendid and esteemed at the highest value. I will give you," line 115, "I will give you a fashioned mixing bowl. It is of silver, all but the edges, and these are finished in gold. This is the work of Hephaestus, the hero Phaedimus, the Sidonian's king, gave it to me when his house took me in and sheltered me there on my way home. I would give it to you for a present." So speaking, the hero, Atreus's son, line 120, put the handled goblet into his hands, and meanwhile strong Megapenthes carried out the mixing bowl gleaming with silver and set it before them. Helen of the fair cheeks stood by, holding the robe in her hands, and spoke to him and named him, saying, "I too give you this gift, dear child, something to remember from Helen's hands, for your wife to wear at the lovely occasion of your marriage. Until that time, let it lie away in your palace, in your dear mother's keeping, and I hope you come back rejoicing to your own strong-founded house and to the land of your fathers." And of course, listeners are thinking, this is not the Helen of the Iliad. Very interesting. Line 130. So speaking, she put it in his hands, and he gladly received it. The hero, Pisistratus, took the presents and packed them into the carrying basket, and in his own mind admired everything. Fair-haired Menelaus led them back into his palace, and the two young men seated themselves on chairs and benches. A maidservant brought water for them and poured it from a splendid and golden pitcher, holding it above a silver basin for them to wash, and she pulled a polished table before them. A grave housekeeper brought in the bread and served it to them, adding many good things to it, generous with her provisions. And the son of Boethous carved the meat and served out the portions, while the son of glorious Menelaus poured the wine for them. They put their hands to the good things that lay ready before them. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, then Telemachus and the glorious son of Nestor harnessed the horses and mounted up into the chariot, bright with bronze, and drove them out the front door and the echoing portico. But fair-haired Menelaus, the son of Atreus, followed, bearing in his right hand a golden cup that was filled with wine as sweet as honey, so they could pour a libation as they went. Line 150. He stood before the chariot and spoke and pledged them, "Farewell, young men. Give my greeting to the shepherd of the people, Nestor, for always he was kind to me like a father when we sons of the Achaeans were fighting in Troyland." Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, "Sir, surely, illustrious sir, when we arrive, we shall tell him all that you say, and I wish that even so I too, arriving in Ithaca, could find Odysseus there in our palace, and tell him I was returning from you, having had all loving treatment and bringing many excellent treasures given me." As he spoke, line 160, a bird flew by on the right, an eagle carrying in his talons a great white goose he had caught tame from the yard, and all of them, men and women, with stopped breath, so they're holding their breath, followed his flight. But the eagle, as he approached them, shot by on the right before the chariot, and they, seeing, were filled with joy, and the hearts in all of them were softened. Line 165. Because, of course, this is a bird sign, and so one of them will have to practice some augury and tell the rest of them what the bird sign means. First of them to speak was Pisistratus, son of Nestor. "Menelaus, illustrious, leader of the people, tell us whether the god showed this sign for you, or was it for us too?" So he spoke, and warlike Menelaus was pondering how to speak his thoughts the right way and give them an answer. But Helen of the light robes anticipated him, saying, "Hear me, I shall be your prophet. The way the immortals put it into my heart, and I think it will be accomplished." Here Helen is acting as a prophetess. And when you are interpreting augury, bird signs and omens and portents and things like that, it doesn't really matter who does it, apparently. "As this eagle came down from the mountain, where was his origin and parentage, and caught the goose that was nursed in the household, so Odysseus, after wandering long and suffering much, will come home and take revenge. Or he is already home, and making a plan of evil for all of the suitors." Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, line 180, "May Zeus, high-thundering husband of Hera, so appoint it. Then even at home I would make my prayers to you as to a goddess." He spoke and laid the lash on his horses, and they very quickly and with eager spirit dashed away to the plain through the city. All day long they shook the yoke they wore on their shoulders, and the sun set and all the journeying ways were darkened. They came to Pherae and reached the house of Diocles, who was son of Ortilochus, whom Alpheus once had childed. There they slept the night, and he gave them hospitality. There are no hotels. This is the way you get around. Remember back in book 3, line 488 and 489, they stayed with Diocles in Pherae on the journey, on the way there. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, they yoked the horses again, line 190, and mounted the chariots bright with bronze, and drove them out the front door and the echoing portico, and he whipped them into a run, and they winged their way, unreluctant. Presently they approached the sheer citadel of Pylos, and then Telemachus spoke a word to the son of Nestor. "A son of Nestor, would you accept what I say and bring it to pass? For you and I can avow ourselves friends forever because of our father's love, and the two of us are the same age, and this journey of ours will add to the feeling we have for each other. Then do not take me, illustrious, past my ship, but leave me there." Line 200. Here we learn that Telemachus is in a very real hurry to get home. He does not want to drive right past his ship and on to Nestor's palace and then try to get away from Nestor. He wants Pisistratus, Nestor's son, to leave him at his ship so he can take off and then say goodbye for him. "But leave me there," line 200, "for fear the old man and his affection will keep me in his house longer than I wish, but I must make my way quickly." He spoke, and the son of Nestor pondered the thought within him, how he could fairly undertake this and see it accomplished. In the division of his heart, this way seemed best to him. He turned the horses toward the fast ship and the sand of the seashore, and on to the stern of the ship unloaded the beautiful presents, the clothing and the gold which Menelaus had given, and spoke, speeding him on his way, and addressed him in winged words. "Go aboard now in haste, and urge on all of your companions to go before I reach home and take the news to the old man." Line 211. "For I know this thing well in my heart, and my mind knows it, how overbearing his anger will be, and he will not let you go, but he will come himself to summon you, and I do not think he will go away without you. As it is, he will be very angry." So he spoke, line 215, and drove away his bright-maned horses back to the city of the Pylians, and reached his home quickly. Telemachus then gave the sign and urged his companions, "Put all running gear in order, friends, on the black ship, and let us ourselves go on board, so we can get on with the journey." So he spoke, line 220, and they listened well to him and obeyed him, and quickly they went aboard the ship and sat to the oarlocks. So, while he was busy with prayer and sacrifice to Athena, beside the stern of the ship, there came to him an outlander from Argos, where he had killed a man. Now he was a fugitive. Now here we have Telemachus trying to get away from Nestor of the many Homeric similes, trying to get away from Nestor without him being able to come back and force him to stay another day or two to listen to stories. And he's approached by a fugitive. And of course, according to the practice, the proper practice of Xenia, you should assist a fugitive. Now he was a fugitive. Line 225. He was a prophet, and by blood was of the stock of Melampus. Melampus once had lived in Pylos, mother of sheep flocks, a rich man among the Pylians, at home in his high house. But then he came to the land of other men, fleeing his country, and great-hearted Neleus, the proudest of all men living, who until a year was fulfilled kept much of his substance by force. For Melampus, meanwhile, in the halls of Phylacus, was held in constraint of wearisome bondage, suffering strong pains for the sake of Neleus's daughter and the bitter infatuation which the goddess Erinnys, one of the Fates, the wreckers of houses, inflicted upon him. Yet he escaped death and drove away the loud lowing cattle from Phylace to Pylos and achieved the unjust labor godlike Neleus imposed on him and led back the lady to his brother's house. So he had to work a year for this woman. But he himself went to the land of others, to horse-pasturing Argos, since now it was ordained for him that he should live there and be lord over many Argives. And there he too married a wife and established a high-roofed house and had children, Mantias and Amphipetes, strong sons. Antiphates had a son. This was great-hearted Oikles. His son was Amphiaraus, leader of storming armies, whom Zeus of the Aegis loved in his heart, as did Apollo with every favor, but he never came to the door-sill of old age, but perished in Thebes, because his wife had been bribed with presents. He in turn had sons, Amphilochus and Alcmaeon. The children born to Mantias were Polyphides and Cleitus, but Dawn of the Golden Throne carried Cleitus away because of his beauty, so that he might dwell among the immortals. But Apollo made high-hearted Polyphides a prophet, and far the best among mortals, after Amphiaraus had died. He, angered with his father in Hypericia, lived and was lord, and there he was a prophet for all men. It was this man's son, by name Theoclymenus, who now came to Telemachus and stood near, and there he found him pouring libation and praying beside his fast black vessel. He came and spoke to him aloud and addressed him in winged words. And before I progress, I ended there with 259, this very long section that started with 223 and has continued until 259 is a very long genealogy, and should you look at a commentary, you could find the genealogy, the parentage, grandparentage of this man who is a prophet. It's really a story that does not belong as part of this story, and so we don't have to deal with that except to understand that this man, looking for refuge, looking to jump on this ship, literally, with Telemachus and run away to get away from here, it will not be able to practice a regular type of Xenia. He can't wait to learn who this man is on the ship because he's fleeing from the family of the man he killed, and he doesn't want to reveal himself unless the person on this ship, who is Telemachus, is not related to the person he killed. So, line 260. "Dear friend, Since I have found you in this place, making sacrifice, I entreat you, first by these rites and spirit, then also by your own head and by your companions who travel with you, tell me truly this thing that I ask you, and hold back nothing. What man are you, and whence? Where is your city, your parents? Line 265. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, Friend, I will accurately answer all that you ask me. Ithaca is my country, and Odysseus is my father, if ever he lived, but by now he must have died by a dismal death. So, taking my black ship, and with my companions, I have come for news of my father, who has been so long absent. Then godlike Theoclymenus said to him in answer, So I too am out of my country, because I have killed a man of my tribe, but he had many brothers and relatives in horse pasture in Argos, with great power among the Achaeans. Avoiding death at the hands of these men and black doom, I am a fugitive, since it is my fate to be a wanderer among men. Give me a place in your ship, since I have come to you as a suppliant, lest they kill me, for now I think they are after me. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, line 280, I will not willingly thrust you away from my balanced ship. Come then with me. There you will be entertained from what we have left. So Telemachus spoke and took the bronze spear from him, and laid it at length upon the deck of the oar-swept vessel. Then he himself mounted on board the sea-going vessel and took his seat on the stern deck, and next him he seated Theoclymenus, and now the men cast off the stern cables. Telemachus then gave the sign and urged his companions to lay hold of the tackle, and they listened to his urging, and raising the mast pole made of fir, they set it upright in the hollow hole in the box, and made it fast with forestays and with halyards, strongly twisted of leather, pulled up the white sails. The goddess, grey-eyed Athena, sent them a favouring stern wind, blustering stormily through the bright air, so that with all speed the ship might run the whole of her course through the sea's salt water. They ran past Crinoe and past Chalcis on the fair waves, and the sun set and all the journeying ways were darkened. Pressing on before the wind from Zeus, she ran past Phaeia, and on past shining Elis, where the Epeans are lord. Then Telemachus set her course over toward the pointed islands, and as he pondered whether he would escape death, as he pondered whether he would escape death or be captured. And now we switch scenes. If you like, you can draw a line between line 300 and line 301 here in book 15, because we are now leaving Telemachus, and he's pondering over whether he's going to be captured or killed by the suitors or will escape. So he's thinking, and we leave him in the new scene. Now in line 301, we are back in Eumaeus's shelter with Odysseus. But now, in the shelter, Odysseus and the noble swineherd were eating their evening meal, and the rest of the men with them. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, Odysseus spoke to them, making trial of the swineherd, to see if he was truly his friend, and would invite him to stay on in his steading as he was, or would urge him to go to the city. Hear me now, Eumaeus, and all you other companions. I am very eager to make my way at dawn to the city and beg there, so I will not wear you out and your men. Only advise me well, and send a good guide to go along with me and see me there. Once in the town, I must even go begging in my need for someone to hand me a bit of bread or a cupful. Then I would go into the house of godlike Odysseus with a message for circumspect Penelope to tell her, and I would mingle with the overbearing suitors to see if they, who have good things in great numbers, would give me a dinner. Soon I would do good work for them, whatever they wanted, for I tell you this, listen to me and understand me, by grace of Hermes, the guide, who dispenses glory and beauty upon the endeavors of all men, I am such a one for work with my hands that no other man alive could compete with me for building a good fire, for splitting up kindling, for carving the meat, or roasting the meat, or filling the wine cups, for all such work as meaner men bestow on their betters. And, of course, Odysseus in Book 18 will be building a good fire. Line 325. Then, deeply troubled, you said to him, O swineherd Eumaeus, O my guest, what is this idea that has come now into your head? Are you utterly bent on achieving your own destruction there? If you mean to lose yourself in that swarm of suitors, whose outrageous violence goes up into the iron sky, for nothing like you are the serving men who work for them, but young men and well-dressed in mantles and tunics, always with neat oiled heads and handsome faces, These are the people who serve under the suitors, and their well-polished tables are heavily loaded with bread and meats and wine. No, rather stay here, line 335. There is none here who is annoyed by your presence, neither myself nor any companion whom I have with me. When, however, the dear son of Odysseus comes back, he will give you a mantle and tunic to wear as clothing, and send you wherever your heart and spirit desire to be sent. Then, much enduring, great Odysseus said to him in answer, I wish, Eumaeus, you could be as dear to our father Zeus as to me, since you stopped my wandering and my terrible sorrow. There is nothing worse for mortal men than a vagrant life, but still, for the sake of the cursed stomach, people endure hard sorrows when roving and pain and grief befall them. But now, since you keep such a man as I am and bid me stay here, come then. Hey, so if you want me to stay a while longer, then let's at least do a little bit of visiting, is what he says here. Tell me about the mother of godlike Odysseus and his father, whom when he went, he left on the doorsill of old age. So when Odysseus left, his parents were just approaching old age. And of course, Odysseus knows what happened to his mother. Are they still alive in the beams of sunlight, line 350, or are they dead by now and gone to the house of Hades? The swineherd, leader of men, then said to him in answer, So, my friend and guest, I will give you an accurate answer. Laertes is still alive, but all the time he is praying to Zeus that the spirit will leave his body in his own palace, for terribly he mourns over the son who is absent, and for his wedded virtuous wife, whose death has hurt him more than all else, and gave him to a green, untimely old age. I'll take a small excursion here. This is a very odd reference, a green, untimely old age, because if Odysseus' father Laertes was approaching old age when Odysseus left 20 years ago, then how he can die a green, an early, untimely death now is beyond me. I have no idea. Back to the text. She died of grieving over her glorious son by a dismal death. I hope that no friend who lives here with me dies such a death, nor any who does me the acts of friendship. Now, while she was still alive, in spite of her grieving, it was my pleasure to try her out and ask her questions, because she brought me up along with her stately daughter, Ketimne, of the light robes, the youngest child. We two grew up together, and I was only a little less favored. But when we had both arrived at our lovely prime, they gave her away for marriage in Samne, and for her were given numberless gifts. But the lady gave me a mantle and tunic, excellent clothing she put upon me, and giving me sandals for my feet, sent me to the estate. From the heart she loved me dearly. Now I go lacking all these things, but the blessed immortals prosper all the work that I myself do abiding here, whence I eat and drink and give to people I honor. But there is no sweet occasion now to hear from my mistress in word or fact, since the evil has fallen upon our household, these overbearing men, and greatly the serving people miss the talk of their mistress's presence, the asking of questions, and eating and drinking there, and then something to take home with them to the country, which always warms the hearts of the serving people. Here we learn that Odysseus's mother was extremely good to her servants, sent things home with them, etc. Line 380. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, You must have been very little then, O swineheart, herd Eumaeus, when you wandered far away from your own country and your parents. But come now, tell me this, and give me an accurate answer. Was there some storming of your wide-wayed city of people, where your father and the lady your mother lived? Or were you caught alone beside your ship and your cattle? And was it enemy men who carried you in their ships and sold you? Here in this man's house, being paid a fair price for you? And here we find Odysseus, probably for the first time ever, is looking at Eumaeus and realizing what a friend he is, and wondering about the life of poor Eumaeus himself. The swineherd, leader of men, then said to him in answer, line 390, My guest, since indeed you are asking me all these questions, listen in silence and take your pleasure, and sit there drinking your wine. These nights are endless, and a man can sleep through them, or he can enjoy listening to stories, and you have no need to go to bed before it is time. Too much sleep is only a bore, and of the others, anyone whose heart and spirit urge him can go outside and sleep, and then, when the dawn shows, breakfast first. Then go out to tend the swine of our master, But we too, sitting here in the shelter, eating and drinking, shall entertain each other, remembering and retelling our sad sorrows. For afterwards a man who has suffered much and wandered much has pleasure out of his sorrows. So I will tell you now the answer to all your questions. There is an island called Syria, and perhaps he's really talking about Cirrus. You may have heard of it, lying above Ortygia, where the sun makes his turnings, line 405. Not so much a populous island, but a good one, good for cattle and good for sheep, full of vineyards and wheat raising. No hunger ever comes on these people, nor any other hateful sickness, of such as befall wretched humanity. But when the generations of men grow old in the city, Apollo of the silver bow, and Artemis with him, comes with a visitation of painless arrows and kills them. There are two cities, and everything is divided between them. And over both of these cities there was one king, my father, Ctesias, or Minos's son, in the likeness of the immortals. There came Phoenician men, line 415, famous seafarers, gnawers at other men's goods, with countless pretty things stored in their black ship. Now in my father's house there was a Phoenician woman, both beautiful and tall, and skilled in glorious handiwork. And yet these Phoenicians, subtle men in their talk, beguiled her. First of all, line 420, when she went out washing, one of them lay with her in love's embrace by the hollow ship, which for female women is a heart's beguilement, even for the one who is a skilled worker. Then he asked her who and whence she was. She readily told them him all about the high-roofed house of her father. Line 425, I claim that I come from Sidon, rich in bronze. I am daughter of Erebus, who has rivers of wealth. But men from Taphus, pirates, caught me and carried me away as I came back home from the fields, and carried me to this place, and sold me here in this man's house, being paid a fair price for me. Then the man who had lain with her secretly said to her, Would you then be willing to go back home again with us, to see once more the high-roofed house of your father and mother and themselves too? For they are still alive, and called wealthy. Then in turn the woman answered them and said to them, That also could be done if you, sailors, were willing to assure me by an oath that you would take me home safely. So she spoke, and all of them swore to this, and she asked them, as she asked them. But when they had sworn the oath and made an end of their swearing, then once again the woman spoke to them and said to them, line 440, Silence now. None of your companions must say anything else to me. When he happens to meet me in the street, or else perhaps at the spring, somebody might go to the house and tell it to the old man, and he might be suspicious, and bind me in painful bondage and plan destruction against the rest of you. Line 445, But keep the word in your hearts, and get on with buying your homeward cargo. But when your ship is loaded with goods, then let there be someone sent to me at the house with word of it quickly, for I will bring you gold, whatever I can lay my hand on. And there is another thing I would willingly give you to pay for my way home. I am nurse to the man's son in his palace, such a cunning child as he runs around outside. If I could take him aboard your ship, he would bring you a price beyond counting, wherever you might sell him among alien-speaking people. These lines tell us that capturing children, this piracy, this kidnapping, and selling them to be slaves somewhere else, so they couldn't eventually remember where they came from or ever get back, this was common practice. This woman had been captured as a child and sold as a slave, and now she has a chance to go back home, and the first thing she thinks of is to grab the child she's in charge of and go sell him. So she spoke and went away back to the splendid palace. And they, with their hollow ship, for the whole of a year remaining in our country, traded and piled up much substance. But when at last their hollow ship was loaded for sailing, they sent their messenger to bring the news to the woman. And of course, the listener must remember that this is Eumaeus, the swineherd, telling the story of his life to Odysseus, who is actually his master in disguise. Line 459. There came a knowledgeable man to the house of my father with a golden necklace, and it was strung with pieces of amber. Amber is a popular gem, semi-precious gem in Greece all over. Now in the hall, the serving women with the lady my mother were turning it in their hands and eyeing it and offering to buy it, and the man nodded silently to the woman. Then, after nodding to her, he went away to the hollow ship, and she took my hand and led me out of the palace. This is what happened to Eumaeus. He was that young child that the serving woman took to sell. Line 466. There in the forecourt, she came upon the cups and the tables of men who had been feasting, associates of my father, but these had gone to a session and debate of the people. She snatched 3 goblets and hid them in the fold of her bosom, and carried them off, and I, in my innocence, went with her. And the sun set, and all the journeying ways were darkened. Walking fast, we made our way to the glorious harbor, where lay the fast-running ship of the men from Phoenicia. They then, putting out, went over the ways of the water after taking us aboard, and Zeus sent a wind to follow. Thus it was that for 6 days, night and day, we sailed on. But when Zeus, son of Cronos, had brought on the 7th day, Artemis of the showering arrows struck down the woman, and she dropped with a splash like a diving tern in the hull's bilge. Then they threw her overboard to be the spoil of the fishes and seals, while I was left alone, heart full of sorrow. And the wind and the current carried the men and brought them to Ithaca, where Laertes bought me for himself with his own possessions. Thus it was that I came to set eyes on this country. Line 485. In turn, illustrious Odysseus gave him an answer. Eumaeus, you have deeply stirred the spirit within me by telling me all these things, the sorrows your heart has suffered. But beside the sorrow, Zeus has placed some good for you, seeing that after much suffering you came into the house of a kindly man, who, as he ought to do, provides you with victuals and drink, and the life you lead is a good one. But I come to you only after much wandering in the cities of people. So now these two were conversing thus with each other, then slept, but not for very much time, only for a little, since soon the glorious dawn came on. And now, if the listener wants to draw a line between line 495 and line 496, this sentence, "since soon the glorious dawn came on," concludes this scene. And now we leave the hut of Eumaeus, and Eumaeus and Odysseus telling about their travels and life stories. And now we're back to Telemachus. We could say, meanwhile, ashore, Telemachus's companions now loosened the sails and took down the mast tree. Remember, the bard just told us that Odysseus and Eumaeus will not have very long to rest because it's almost morning. And now Telemachus is arriving, and it's almost morning. And rowed her in with oars to the mooring. They threw over the anchor stones and made fast the stern cables, and themselves stepped out onto the break of the sea beach, line 500, and then made ready their dinner and mixed the bright wine with water. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, then the thoughtful Telemachus began their discourse. The rest of you now take the black ship on to the city, while I go out and visit the estate of the herdsmen. Line 505. In the evening, when I have looked at the holdings, I will come back to town. I will set a good feast before you, meats and sweet-tasting wine, to be my thanks for sharing the journey with me. And, of course, we know Telemachus is not going to come back. Athena told him to go to the house of the swineherd and stay there overnight, but apparently he's just as clever as his father and mother, and so, to set everybody off guard and not know when he's arriving home so he could be ambushed, he says, "I'll come back to town and set a feast before you." Line 508. Then in turn, godlike Theoclymenus said to him, "Where shall I go then, dear child? Of the men who are lords here in rocky Ithaca, who is there whose house I can visit? Or shall I go straight to the house where you live and to your mother?" And, of course, this man, Theoclymenus, is the fugitive. He's come with Telemachus, and now he doesn't know what to do. You know, should I come with you, or should I go to the house of your mother, or tell me somewhere I can visit? As a proper host, Telemachus is responsible for telling this man where he can go to get a meal, a bath, and a room. And it would be natural for him to assume that Telemachus is the boss of his own house and run things. So should he go to Telemachus's house and say, "Telemachus sent me, give me hospitality"? And of course, poor Telemachus is just now growing up and coming into his own. And so he's going to have to reveal a little bit to this guest. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, line 513, Were things otherwise, indeed, I would urge you to visit our house. We lack no means as hosts, and yet for yourself it would be worse, for I shall be absent, nor will my mother see you. With suitors there in the house, she does not often appear, but stays in the upper room and works at her weaving. But I'll indicate another man you could go to. And here, Telemachus switches into a very sarcastic tone. Remember, Eurymachus is the suitor who is bringing the most gifts to Penelope. And so this is what Telemachus tells his guest. I'll indicate another man you could go to. Eurymachus, the glorious son of prudent Polybus, line 520, whom now the people of Ithaca look on as a divinity, since he is their best man by far, and is the most eager to marry my mother and seize the rights and powers of Odysseus, by Zeus the Olympian dwelling in the high air, and knows whether the evil day will end him before he can make that marriage. As he spoke, a bird flew by on the right, a falcon. Oh my goodness, another bird sign. Line 525. A falcon, swift messenger of Apollo, and in his claws he carried a pigeon, and tore at it so that a shower of feathers drifted to the ground between the ship and Telemachus. Theoclymenus called him away from his other companions, and took him by the hand, and spoke and named him, saying, Telemachus, not without a god's will did this bird fly past you on the right. Okay, because what kind of man is this? We heard a very long oration of this man, Theoclymenus, that he is from a family of prophets, right? So who better to interpret this bird sign? For I knew when I saw it that it was a portent. No other family shall be kinglier than yours in the country of Ithaca, but you shall have lordly power forever. Line 535. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, If only this word, stranger and guest, case of Aeneas, were brought to fulfillment, soon you would be aware of my love and many gifts given by me, so any man who met you would call you blessed. He spoke, and said a word to Piraeus, a faithful companion. Piraeus, son of Clytius, in other ways also you follow my will, beyond the other friends who went with me to Pylos. So now, too, take this guest home to your house and give him his honor due and loving attention until I come to you. And so Telemachus does know how to do the right thing and sends this man, this prophet, who just gave him a very good prophecy, sends him home with him. So he spoke, and spear-famed Piraeus gave him an answer, line 545. Telemachus, even if you were to stay out there for a long time, we shall lack no means as host to this man, and I shall look after him. So speaking, he went aboard the ship and told his companions also to go aboard and to cast off the stern cables. And quickly they went aboard the ships and sat to the oarlocks. But under his feet Telemachus bound on his fair sandals and then caught up a powerful spear edged with sharp bronze from the ship's deck. But the other men cast off the stern cables and pushed off and sailed away to the city as they were asked to by Telemachus, beloved son of godlike Odysseus. He stepped out, and his feet took him swiftly, until he came to the yard where there were countless pigs, and near them always slept the noble swineherd, with kind thoughts for his masters. And there ends Book 15.